Red Sox-Yankees game three of their series tonight in the Bronx. Here to talk more about that, our friend Sean McAdam from Boston Sports Journal. Hello there, Sean.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And we'll talk about the Red Sox-Yankees in a moment, but let's get to the important things first. How was your time in Maine?
It was terrific, as always. I don't know if I should thank you for your great hospitality as a resident of the state, but we enjoyed ourselves tremendously and had good weather over the week, so no complaints whatsoever. Can't wait till next year.
Well, we all pitched in to make sure the weather would cooperate.
Well, that's much appreciated here.
And also, because I was so jealous that you were going, how was the Hall & Oates and Squeeze concert?
That too was excellent. I'm a huge fan of Squeeze. My wife and I have seen them countless times, and they got a good hour-long opening set. And the Hall & Oates set was good, a little slick at times, and a little maybe unfocused. I think it was the first show of the tour, so we'll give them a break because some COVID rust there, but all in all, a very enjoyable night.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that on both counts. Now to the less enjoyable things. The Red Sox falling on hard times lately, swept yesterday. One of the decisions that people are looking at is pulling Tanner Houck with less than 60 pitches. Alex Cora has been doing that all season long, though, so it certainly wasn't out of character.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that in hindsight you second guess because it didn't go right. If Garrett Whitlock pitches the way he did most of the season and gets through that sixth and maybe rather the fifth and into the sixth, and you turn it over to Barnes in the seventh and slam the door, then nobody says too much about lifting Houck. But clearly they think that there is some risk to having him face the lineup a third time. And when you look a little closer at the numbers, once he is over 50 pitches, the slash line against him is pretty eye-opening. Hitters are batting about .355, I think, and a slugging percentage of over .500. So I think there is kind of a hump for him to get over. You can argue that if you don't let him try to do that at some point, then you're never going to know if he's ready to go a little deeper in the game. The fact that they did it yesterday in a big game. And as I said, you know, on most occasions, you'd be feeling pretty good about the game if you left it in the hands of Garrett Whitlock and Josh Taylor. But both were off of their control, loaded the bases together, and then a couple of a bloop hit brings in two runs and another hit brings in one. That's going to happen when you load the bases with one out. And it reflected back on that decision to pull Houck.
And a tough situation for Taylor yesterday, who didn't even know until earlier that day whether he would be eligible to come off the COVID IL and pitch, and then to get thrown into a big situation in such an important game. But they don't have many options with Darwin's and Hernandez out.
Yeah, they are really down to probably four relievers they trust in high-leverage situations. The two we just mentioned, Whitlock and Taylor, along with Ottavino and Barnes, and maybe you throw Salamura into that, although he typically gets used a little earlier in game situations. And it's hard to have that translate to a seven-inning game. What's late? You know, is the fifth inning late? Well, when there's only two innings after it, kind of. So all the rules go out the door in those seven-inning doubleheaders.
They've been riding that bullpen pretty hard all season long, so it would seem getting help at the deadline might have been a good idea, but it seems like they didn't do so well. How did they get it so wrong with Hansel Robles and Austin Davis?
Yeah, I mean, Davis hasn't been too bad. There have been a lot of balls in play, but not particularly hard hit balls off him. Robles is another matter. He clearly has not pitched well. He didn't pitch well in July for Minnesota before the trade, which made it kind of questionable at the time. You're looking at his game log from the month of July, which included allowing a walk-off grand slam only a week before he was traded from the Twins to the Red Sox, and you're kind of scratching your head and asking, what did they see there? I guess maybe they thought the stuff was pretty good, and it was a matter of some fine-tuning, either with his pitch mix or delivery. But and maybe that still happens in time. This guy has closed for the Mets and Angels. He's had some good seasons. It's not like he's 39 years old or anything. But like a lot of relievers in the game, their performance is not always consistent. You know, it's 1 year good, 1 year bad. That's why it's always risky to give some of these guys closers long-term contracts. Not that the Red Sox did that with Robles, but I think, frankly, they just hoped that a change of scenery would yield better results, and that certainly hasn't happened in the last three-plus weeks since they've had him.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Speaking of change of scenery, Sox hoping that, no place like home for Travis Shaw as they picked him up after being released by the Milwaukee Brewers. What role do you see him playing going forward?
Well, he gives them a little bit more versatility that they're now missing after they designated and then released Marwin Gonzalez. Mm. Not that Gonzalez was giving them anything at all offensively. That's why he's gone. But he was a pretty good defender at multiple positions. And while people around here tend to remember Shaw as either a third baseman or first baseman, he also played a decent amount of second while with Milwaukee and can handle that position, at least in small bunches. So he gives them someone that can play three out of four infield positions. But clearly the idea is for him to be kind of part of a platoon at first, to be the left-handed bat to counter with Dahlbeck, who's improved of late. But I've got to think that with Arroyo coming back soon, and for whatever reason, Danny Santana about to join him, it wouldn't surprise me if this Travis Shaw experiment was short-lived. I mean, to me, he's got to make an impact here in the next week if he wants to hold on to that roster spot.
Pitching-wise, an encouraging return from Chris Sale, and I thought the decision to pitch him against the Orioles was great. You want your number one guy to have some confidence after missing 2 years. What's the plan for stretching him out a little bit and extending him deeper into games?
Well, he was, 83 or 88, I can't remember, 80-something pitches in the start against the Orioles. And for the most part, other than the two solo home runs, was pretty effective. Not vintage Chris Sale. The velo was kind of more 94, 95 than it was the 96 to 98 that you might see him when he's operating at full throttle. I think that, you know, there are graduated steps here, and a lot of it is going to be game-related. If he's in the sixth inning next time and is up into 90 pitches and not struggling, they probably let him finish the inning. I don't see them letting him get past 100 pitches in the next couple of starts. But I think you give him, you know, a little bit more of the leash each time out, see how he does with it, and then manage it within, you know, whatever the scenario of the actual game is. How much has he had to reach back? How much has he labored early in the game? You know, who's coming up? Those kind of things. The sort of same sort of decision-making that goes on with every pitcher, but, of course, with an eye toward the fact that, as you noted, this guy hasn't pitched against big-league hitters, for two full years, so you're a little more circumspect with him going deeper.
And will they bring Tanner Houck back for a few more starts?
Yeah, that seemed to be a paper move last night when they optioned him back, in part because he was the 27th man added because of the doubleheader,
right,
and sending him right back, particularly when they have two off days in the next five. They're off tomorrow, and they're off again on Monday. So that provides them with the opportunity to, you know, if you're looking at that, he probably doesn't start again until Tuesday against Minnesota. So they've taken the opportunity to keep an extra body around rather than have him sit there and not contribute until next week. But I've got to believe that with both Perez and Richards now moved to the bullpen, you can expect that Houck will probably take a pretty regular turn the rest of the way.
So we had a great ride for the better part of 4 months with this team, some struggles now. I look around at the rest of the American League East, and even with the Yankees and Tampa Bay, I don't understand. They just find a way to make magic out of what seemed to be inferior talent, but the sum of the parts is greater than those individual pieces, I guess. But what do you think on this Red Sox team? Is this a collapse, or is this just a bump in the road and they'll find a way to rally with arguably their strongest roster of the season right now?
Yeah, that's the irony, Rich, is that with Schwarber now healthy, with Arroyo set to come back and provide a little additional depth, with Sale back, they are deeper and better personnel-wise than they have been all year, and yet it hardly is reflected in their one loss on a day-to-day basis for the last few weeks. I'll say this. You know, they just are about to, in a few hours, finish up the real iron part of the schedule, where it seems like they've been playing nobody but Toronto, Tampa, and New York for a stretch of a few weeks. And they've been pretty beaten up by that. Mm. But it gets a lot easier starting Friday. If you look at the schedule, they've got Texas for three. And I know the Rangers took three out of four from them in Arlington earlier in the year. But the Rangers are neck and neck with the Orioles for the title of worst team in the American League. That's followed by Minnesota, a team that is hugely underachieved this year. Then they go to Cleveland, a team that is now under 500 and out of contention. So you go from playing, you know, three pretty quality opponents in your own division to two of the worst teams in the league, followed by a pretty mediocre one. If they can't take advantage of that improvement in the schedule, then shame on them, because it's about to get a lot easier. In fact, I think of the 40 games they have left, something like 22, more than half, are against teams with losing records. They've got a couple of series left with Baltimore. They've got a season-ending series with Washington. They've got Texas coming up, as I noted, Minnesota. So there are some opportunities here to beat up on teams like they did with the Orioles over the weekend at Fenway. And it couldn't come at a better time because they're now desperate for every win.
There you go. Sean McAdam breaking it down for us from Boston Sports Journal. Sean, great to talk with you. As always, thanks for joining us this afternoon, and we'll do it again before too long.
My pleasure, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Sean McAdam on Downtown.